Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today's program is part of a multi-week series where we're highlighting national organizations involved in pro-life work across the country. The purpose of this series is twofold. First, we want to help Christians better understand the wide range of organizations working to protect human life, including groups that come from different religious, philosophical, and political backgrounds. And second, we want to learn how others are making the case for life in a culture that doesn't always share our faith, and what we can learn from those approaches as we talk with people from diverse backgrounds about life issues. Today, I'm joined by Lauren Polk, Executive Director of Rehumanize International, a nonpartisan, non-sectarian human rights organization dedicated to protecting human dignity and providing a culture of peace. Lauren, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you. I'm glad you said yes.
Of course.
So let's begin with that defining moment in your life. I've read that your passion for defending human life is deeply personal. Can you share what happened?
Yes, absolutely. So my husband and I, we got married in college and just really hit the ground running. And so we were pregnant with our oldest son as college students. And it was one of those, everything that could go wrong with the pregnancy did. I had bleeding early on. We had threatened miscarriages, just all kinds of things. But then at 22 weeks, my water broke. And at that point, I did not have any concept or idea that anything could be done to try to continue the pregnancy. I just thought when your water broke, you had a baby, and that was how it was. But luckily, I had a doctor who was a pro-life doctor who said, hey, we can try to stop this. If you want, you know, we can try to keep you pregnant for a few more weeks to give your baby a chance. Because if you deliver right now, and it was 20 years ago, you know, if you deliver right now, there's really no chance of survival. But we can try. If you would like to, we can try. And so I was like, yes, of course. Of course I want to try.
Why did you not?
Yeah. Right, exactly. And so they transferred me to another hospital. And they were actually able to keep me pregnant for another 7 weeks. So he was born at 29 weeks. But while I was in the NICU as part of the, the perinatal unit before he was born, they do a tour of the NICU. They take the late women to the NICU so you can kind of get an understanding of what to expect it's going to be like when your baby is born. So they took me on the tour, and on the tour, there was this tiny little baby who had been born at 25 weeks, and she was in her little isolette. And was just, you know, a baby, if obviously, you know, small, little tiny baby, but very clearly a baby. And seeing her, I immediately thought in relation to abortion, like, oh, my God, we are saying it is OK to kill, obviously, you know, babies here. And so that sort of was the immediate shift in my mind politically to that I need to, you know, oppose this. But then also when my son was born, again, he was born at 29 weeks. So then he was a little baby in the NICU. And just that really showed me what it meant to defend life at the very, very earliest stages.
Well, thankfully, your baby survived. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yes, he did. He is now fully grown man. He is doing great. But yeah, he was very, very tiny. He was 2 pounds, 4 ounces when he was born. But luckily and really miraculously, he did not have a lot. When you have your water break early, the big thing that they're concerned about is that their lungs won't develop, you know, properly. Right. Because even if you can make it many, many weeks after the rupture, if there's not any fluid, then the lungs don't really develop past the point where the rupture happened. But for us, he happened to have a little pocket of fluid right in front of his face. So even though there was very little fluid overall, there was one little pocket in front of his face. And so his lungs were fine, like as much as you would expect any baby born at 29 weeks to have. So he didn't really need a lot of breathing support or anything like that. And his NICU journey was primarily just getting bigger and growing and, you know, the normal struggles that preemies face, but not the catastrophic issues that sometimes they have if they're preterm babies. So it was very miraculous. And he's doing great now, no issues long term. So
good, good. So Lauren, how did raising a child with which many consider, you know, too early shape your understanding of vulnerability, dependence, and human dignity?
Well, it was very visceral and immediate how dependent we were, because when you have a preemie, you can't take them out. They can't go to daycare. They basically have to be cocooned at home as much as possible. And so we really had to rely on our families and our support systems to help us out in those early days, because, you know, even going to the grocery store was a risk. Yeah. So, and that was days before you could order groceries and all of that. Yeah. So we had to have people in our community to help us. And that really was something that I think it's hard for everybody to ask for help, but being in a situation where there wasn't really an alternative because our baby was so vulnerable really showed us that very early. And then also because he was so vulnerable himself, it was very illuminating how fragile life can be just in general.
Yeah, I think about times in my life when I've had to rely on people or had to be very vulnerable with, you know, whether it was illness or personal situations. It does do something for you long term. You know, because it's not easy to be vulnerable.
No.
You know, but it's almost like once you have been, then it kind of opens the door for a future vulnerability down the road. So not that we celebrate, you know, what you've gone through and what perhaps some of the things that we've gone through as well, but I think it helps shape us as people, as humans. So it's good.
It definitely does. It definitely does. And also you find that people are happy to help, right? Like if you have a tiny little baby and someone has to bring you groceries, they're happy to feel like they're doing something that's, you know, helping you, even if you feel a little bit uncomfortable asking for it. So that was also a good lesson.
Absolutely. One thing I heard today, I was talking to someone and she said, let them tell you no. In other words, ask. I know it's a little sidebar there, but that's just kind of like a life lesson. Let them tell you no.
Yeah.
Just know that I know for them.
Yeah, exactly. But it was hard because you know, you want to.
You're right.
But yeah, absolutely.
Yep. So Laura, when you look at your son today, now you said he's a thriving young man. What does his life say to you about how society often underestimates the value of human beings in their most fragile stage?
Well, I think, you know, it's one of those things where, especially in the medical profession, a lot of doctors are very quick to say, this condition your child has is not going to be compatible with life. We're not going to be compatible with a meaningful life. And they make a lot of prognostications that aren't necessarily even remotely valid, right? In my son's case, he has very little lingering issues from his prematurity. But also, even in the cases when they are correct, and this person really does have, you know, as debilitating a condition as they thought, they can't assign value when they're so young. And I think that they really try to. They're like, they are very quick to say, oh, you wouldn't want to raise a child like that. Whereas when you talk to the parents who are raising children like that, it's often a very different story. They're very thankful for their life. And so I learned that very early on with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I am similar situation. I have a family member that's in a nursing home. And, you know, he and I often have conversations about the value of his life, even though he's not able to get up and do for himself. And like, well, your life still makes a difference. You're making a difference to the people that come in and out of your door, you know, whether you're encouraging them or praying for them or whatever. So there's value, but our society sometimes does not value those that are weak or frail or sick. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see that too with our organization, with Rehumanize International. We talk about issues that span, you know, the whole human lifespan. So we talk about issues relating to end of life and how there's a push for assisted suicide and MAID and that sort of thing for people who are entering, you know, the last parts of an illness. And it is kind of this cultural thing where people are saying, oh, well, wouldn't you be rather just die than continue on this way? And a lot of
absolutely. So you mentioned Rehumanize International, which is an organization you now lead. Tell us a little bit more about your organization and how you became involved.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rehumanize International, we are a consistent life ethic group, which means that we oppose all forms of aggressive violence from, again, conception till natural death, which means that we get involved in things like activism against abortion, embryonic stem cell research and destruction, but also things like the death penalty or police mm-hmm. brutality or, you know, war and all these kind of issues. Which then I say that it sounds like, oh, well, you're against a lot, which is true. We are against a lot. But really, we're for also trying to bring a humanity to everyone within these different kinds of situations and really right. Bring that human dignity back into the conversations. And so how I got involved with Rehumanize is we have an annual conference every year. And as part of that conference, we have a art, literature, poetry, 3D art, all kinds of creative endeavor program called Create Encounter. And I, many years ago, had a prose piece which won first prize in Create Encounter. And so I came to the conference. And before then, I had just known Rehumanize virtually, you know, through our social media and that sort of thing. But I came to the conference, which was really great because the conference brings together all these people from all those different issues, you know, talking mm-hmm. about things. And I really enjoyed it. So I got more involved, you know, did more things as a volunteer. Then I became a member of the board. And then, as so often happens, I was too good of a board member. So when the executive director position opened up, I was the one that stepped in first as interim and then now as I'm executive director. So,
right. That's good. I like the fact that you said you it sounds like you're against a lot, but, you know, what are you for? And I think even just in the pro-life movement in general, that's something that I think sometimes we forget to reframe. It's not right. so much what we're about, what we're against, but what are we for?
Right.
So I like that you said that. What are you for? So,
yeah.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark. Today we're talking with Lauren Pope, Executive Director of Rehumanize International, as part of a multi-week series where we're talking with national pro-life organizations about their work. We're also doing this so that Christians can better be equipped to speak about life with neighbors, coworkers, and family members, and so they can better understand how pro-life work is evolving on a national level. So on Life Matters, we usually discuss making the pro-life case through a Christian lens. But today's conversation is an opportunity to hear how the case for life is being made through human rights lens and how this perspective can help Christians engage more effectively in a divided culture. From your perspective, how does grounding the case for life and universal human dignity help save babies?
Okay, so I will say, first and foremost, it allows us to reach people who maybe are not part of a religious tradition or part of our specific religious tradition. And we can talk to them in ways that are just more the universal values that we all share with regards to, you know, don't kill people is pretty much, you know, the basic one. And then some other
right.
build upon that. And so they don't have their heckles up about, you know, any specific religious issue, because so often when you're having an abortion debate, and this is kind of a distraction tactic, I think, on the other side's part largely, but you get drawn into like these theological debates that really don't have a lot to do with the topic at hand, but then it's people going back and forth about, you know, various churches. So we're able to sidestep that a little bit, which is helpful. And then we're also able to reach people who might be active in other kinds of human rights work who haven't considered that abortion should also be included in that circle of care. And so we have a question that we ask people where it's like, where are your blind spots? Like, where are you maybe not expanding your nonviolence to? And a lot of times that is abortion, because a lot of times people are coming from these issues from the left, and just in the way that our, you know, political system is in America, if you come in from the left, you're probably not hearing a lot of pro-life arguments. So we kind of pull that over a little bit and just ask people those questions of like, are you maybe leaving someone out of this? Mm-hmm. Is that someone who's particularly vulnerable too. And I think that's mm-hmm. another issue is that the unborn are a extraordinarily vulnerable class of human beings mm-hmm. who are completely reliant on another person for, you know, just basic continuation of life. And in most cases, the more vulnerable someone is, the more protections they get. But when it comes to abortion, that's completely, you know, upended and they have the least protection. So we'll yeah. try to make that connection too. And then I will say, although we are a secular organization, a lot of people who are familiar with the consistent life ethic or the seamless garment come out of Catholicism, as did our founder, Amy Murphy. And so if I'm speaking with someone who does have that tradition in their background, then I will talk to them in slightly more religious terms, just that they are kind of already familiar with the basic framework. And I'm like, we're that, but a secular version, you know. So the way that I describe it kind of depends on the audience, but that's sort of how we tie everything together.
Good. I like the fact that you said, where are your blind spots? Because I think even as Christians that are pro-life, sometimes we have blind spots. I was at a conference once and I heard someone say that you can't be pro-life and not be a Christian. And I don't necessarily know that I agree with that. It just kind of made me think, you know, so what happens with those that have a secular, more of a secular worldview, and they value life, but they don't necessarily believe the same things I do. And so I think that's a very good question. What are blind sides? Even as, I'm going to say Christian pro-life people, what are some of the blind spots that we have when it comes to defending life? Yeah. Can you share with me about Rehumanize, your perspective and work around the abortion issue?
So sometimes our focus gets pulled more in one direction or another, contingent on what is happening in the world right now. So if there's a lot of war stuff happening, then we'll be talking more about war, that sort of thing. But abortion is really where the organization started and is the primary focus. Just we're going on our 15th year because it's just by the numbers, the largest human rights abuse, right? I mean, in mm-hmm. most yeah. countries, abortion is the leading cause of death. In most countries, there, you know, the abortion rate is closing in on the birth rate. It's just mm-hmm. this massive amounts of violence happening mm-hmm. every single day. And so with everything else, we obviously care a lot about, we want to talk mm-hmm. about, but there's just the urgency with abortion, it just continues on, because even in this post-Roe world, we've just seen the shift now to abortion pills by mail. And I'm sure your right. group is dealing with a lot of that.
Absolutely.
So there's still just so much work to be done on the abortion front. So.
Yeah, that's good. So you guys describe abortion not merely as a medical decision, but as an act of violence against a human being. Why is it important to seek honesty about abortion while still approaching women with compassion?
Because I think there is so much like euphemism and obfuscation when it comes to talking about abortion that we don't want to say and be honest, like, no, this is a violent act.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to call people kind of out and in mm-hmm. to ways that maybe they aren't appreciating that they are perpetuating violence or a violent system. I mean, you see that in a lot of human rights areas where someone yeah. isn't really aware of, like, you know, the damage they might be causing. And so when it comes to abortion specifically, calling it out as, hey, this is something that is violence. And also because most people, just like the average person, does not want to, you know, participate in violence. They're trying yeah. to live their life in a good way and aren't really thinking about it because it's, you know, it's hidden and it's harder. Yeah. And I was talking to was saying that people, you know, they kind of turn a blind eye, and they were talking about violence within prisons, in the prison system, and how people don't think about it. They don't look at it because it's hidden. It's something that unless you are there in those places, you don't see, you don't think about, you don't really acknowledge. And that abortion is very similar in that it's just it's hidden violence. And anytime there's hidden violence, it's just easy for us to turn away from. And so.
Right.
So we talk about it like that. And we also have talked about it in terms of, you know, like restorative justice generally, part of that paradigm is recognizing that you have committed an offense or you have committed mm-hmm. violence. And within the whole system, I'm going to talk about that later about the systems that sort of play into that violence. But we try to, tie things to things that maybe someone who comes at this from a more progressive, left-leaning worldview is familiar with the language and then can kind of understand how it relates to abortion specifically.
Absolutely. I was thinking as you were talking, you know, we don't often hear the word rehumanize, but we hear the word dehumanize. And I think to a certain extent, we have allowed the unborn and, you know, today we're talking about the unborn to be dehumanized because of the words that we use or how we, choose to talk, you know, about an unborn baby. And so I think that has played a lot into sometimes why our culture feels the way they do about the unborn. And I mean, our culture in general. But and so our culture often does tie human worth to independence, productivity, or success. But what happens when those standards are used to decide who deserves protection?
Yeah. And that's the thing. We have, you know, I think one of our stickers, it's like, you know, everyone deserves a life free of violence. Everyone deserves this protection. And if you're saying that, you know, your worth is tied to your productivity or anything like that, then you create, you know, a really pretty scary system where you're constantly trying to fight to prove your worth. And if you fall below that, then now you're in danger. And I think we're seeing that a lot. I mean, like I said before, especially with the assisted suicide, where it's just people are very quick to say, well, you know, you don't want to be a burden, do you? And that, and that's actually when people actually seek out MAID or assisted suicide. The primary reason is not pain, is not that they are intractable pain or anything like that. It is because they feel like they're a burden to their families and ones. You need to really speak loudly about the fact that, you know, you can have infinite worth even when you are not being actively productive or cannot be ever again or before.
So if dehumanization is the root of all violence, how does educating people about dehumanization, how do you think it helps build a culture of peace?
So I think that when you are really forced to look at someone who you consider an enemy as a human being, it is much, much harder to then take a violent action towards them, especially an aggressively violent action towards them. And it's something you have to be reminded of, right? Especially in today's culture where there is just so much happening and so many people who are doing things where you're just like, how in the world could they be doing this? And it's very easy to slip into, we actually have a little flyer that talks about the dehumanizing language, the way we talk about other people. And it's very easy to start calling someone a monster or whatever. And, you know, for reasons, right? They are doing things that it really do better. But when you're not thinking about them as human beings, then you are making it easier for you to commit violence against them. And with abortion specifically, I mean, we see that all the time. The language has only gotten worse and more strident and more really hateful since I've been in the movement for 20 years. I mean, before people might say like, it's the parasite or something like that. But now people say things online where you're just like, what happened? What hurts you so much that that's how you're, you know, conceptualizing like a fetus? That's very strange. So we do try to keep like, stay with humanizing language for everybody.
Can you share how you're framing the pro-life discussion around dehumanization and what response you're having?
Yeah. So I think that we it's an interesting situation. So I think that for a lot of people, especially younger people, college students and that sort of thing, they get excited to see some of the ways that we frame things that they hadn't thought about before. And that kind of, again, fits their sort of worldview more generally and lets them be like, oh, I can be pro-life and still be anti-racist. I can be pro-life, you know, because they're sort of, no one is explicitly usually saying you can't, but you just get the general idea because everyone around you isn't pro-life, that it's not an acceptable, you know, place to be. And so just sort of seeing that permission that, oh, I can fit all of these parts of myself together is really helpful for people. And then, I mean, it's also just gives rhetorically a way of talking about things that, especially the abortion issue, that people don't hear often. And so often with when you are debating abortion specifically, it's the same arguments over and over again. You know, everything's kind of rehashed. You know all the beats. You know what someone's going to say.
Yep.
And so we come in and say something different, and people have to stop and think for a minute, like, wait, hold on. What are, okay, I have to actually consider that one.
Do you have a specific example?
So I would say that we were at the conference at Yale, and it was actually someone on the right who was looking at our material and that sort of thing. Because this also happens sometimes, is that so they think, oh, like those are a bunch of liberal causes, and that's, you know, and again, like no one's really like seeing it all. And it was a couple from the College Republicans that came up, and they're like, you know, it makes sense what you're saying. I can see it. I was like, so that was good too, because that's also important to us, is to be a bridge to people who might otherwise think that, oh, all of these left-wing causes are so out there and crazy, but showing the more right-leaning pro-life groups, like, hey, no, like they're really coming at this from this, or we're coming at this from a human rights angle, and a lot of them are as well, and where can we find common ground is important to us too.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Lauren Pope. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bott Radio Network.